Around the world, 9 million criminals behind bars. Armed robbers, rapists, and murderers. Most surrender to incarceration, but some fight back and escape. Tonight, in Britain, a breakout that turns the criminal underworld on its own kind.
They're tow rags, they're informers, they're rats, they grass each other up.
In Australia, the bank-robbing postcard bandit masterminds a mass escape.
He said about living and breathing escape plans.
And in America, a gang of murderers are loose on the streets of Miami.
These five individuals are extremely dangerous. We do not know where they are at this point in time.
This program contains reconstructions. The prison breaks are real. Her Majesty's Gartrand Prison, Leicestershire, 1987. A top security house of correction for 320 of the most vicious criminals in the UK.
Gartrand took top security prisoners, terrorists, including the IRA, terrorism abroad, and serious life sentence prisoners.
With so many violent inmates, Gartrand is an escapee's hell. Each cell is a cage within a cage. The high walls are impossible to climb. 24-hour electronic surveillance covers every inch of concrete and steel within the walls.
There have been attempts of escapes over the period up until 1987. None of those have been successful.
But 38-year-old violent career criminal John Kendall is determined to be the first. A lone wolf convicted of armed robbery, sentenced 21 years, Kendall is feared and hated for his ruthless brutality.
I knew him quite well as a person. I knew he was going to be trouble.
He had this history of extreme violence, armed robberies, shot a man three times, I think in his leg, just trying to escape from a robbery. This is the sort of man you would not want to meet anywhere.
Kendall knows the only way out of Gartrand is through the front gate. But this cunning thug believes he has found a gap in the prison security, a gap as big as a football field.
He was known to have been a potential escaper, but it was assumed, because of the history of Gartrand, no one had escaped prior to this.
Kendall firstly contacts his friend, ex-con Andrew Russell, a football hooligan who is back on the streets after serving time for assault.
Kendall was obviously talking to Russell to make plans of how they were going to escape, when they were going to escape, what time, and all the details that they needed to have in their heads.
The two hatch a plot right under the noses of the prison guards. Kendall sends Russell to the local library, where he studies maps of the prison and the surrounding countryside. Back in Gartrand Prison, Kendall brazenly asks to see local maps.
He argued that he wanted to study navigation, and the canals of Leicestershire were of great interest to him, and he was particularly interested in Leicestershire maps.
With the groundwork complete, on December the 10th, Andrew Russell takes to the air in a chartered helicopter and heads towards Gartrand Prison. Fremantle, Western Australia, 1989. Fremantle Prison, built from solid limestone in 1849, was host to over 10,000 transported convicts during the 19th century. Little has changed since colonial times. It now serves as the state's top maximum security unit.
A right royal hellhole. It was absolutely disgusting.
Fremantle's tough, almost medieval conditions give it a fearsome reputation.
There was no electricity. It was freezing in winter. It was 40, 45 plus in the cells in summer. It was a very unpleasant place to live.
Locked inside is a career criminal, convicted of stealing $110,000 from a Perth bank in an armed holdup. 27-year-old Brendan Abbott. Sentence, 12 years.
I wouldn't like to have been a bank staff member opposite him when he was wielding a shotgun.
Abbott's criminal career began when he was just 14 years old. Now in Fremantle Prison for the third time, Abbott received an extra 6 years on his sentence for being a ringleader of a two-day prison riot. He began to plan a quicker exit.
He was sitting in the tailor shop one day, working away on his sewing machine, and his eyes have casually drifted up the wall and he's seen the bars up there. Someone's offered him a brand new hacksaw blade and asked him if he had any use for it, and he, of course, had said yes.
Abbott hatches an escape plot with two fellow prisoners, William Monaghan and Aaron Reynolds. Day after day, Monaghan and Reynolds use the hacksaw blade and the bars in the tailor shop, while Abbott distracts the guards.
He would keep the officers occupied talking about various things while people were working for him in the store.
Abbott also discovered that tucked away in the back of the tailor shop was some navy blue overall material, and he's casually asked his supervisor if he could perhaps show him how to make a set of overalls. Coincidentally, blue overalls was what the Metropolitan Security Unit, who patrolled the prison, also wore.
On November the 24th, 1989, the bars are finally cut through. The gang must move immediately. They quickly put on their homemade overalls, climb out of the window and onto the prison roof. They are now in full view of armed guards in the towers.
Every prison officer carries a whistle, and if he doesn't respond to the call, then you blow the whistle, right? And if he keeps going, you shout, "Halt or I'll fire."
But there is no whistle and no shots.
The officer on the number four gun tower, he actually did see them. He's seen them running, but with the uniforms on, he thought it was the MSU doing some training.
But to make it over the roofs, the gang will have to leap over a series of 3 metre gaps.
That would have all been done on sheer adrenaline. And whether anybody has experienced that amount of adrenaline going through their body, it's like they have superhuman powers.
But only two prisoners make it to the third roof.
William Monaghan unfortunately failed to make one of the jumps and went down between two buildings and was found in considerable pain by some prison officers a short while later.
Abbott and Reynolds climb over the final barbed wire fence to the last roof.
And then jump from that roof to Freedom, and then ran down to the main street of Fremantle and jumped on a bus. All their colleagues back in the tailor shop had kept working as though nothing had happened, and it was a good 40 minutes to 50 minutes before the escape was actually discovered.
As desperate escapees, Brendan Abbott and Aaron Reynolds disappear into the streets of Fremantle, authorities fear the worst. Florida, USA, 1994. 75 miles northwest of Miami is the Glades Correctional Institution. Built in the Florida cane fields, Glades is a giant razor wire cage, housing 1,100 of the most brutal criminals in the USA. Six observation towers guard the perimeter, while 200 armed officers patrol the grounds.
This prison is a very tough place to get out or to attempt to make any escapes.
In December 1994, six convicted killers are desperate to break out.
The six escapees were the most vicious murderers in South Florida in 1995.
Hector Rivas pushed a boat captain into the ocean and watched him drown. Florenzo Alvarez killed a roommate and then burnt his body. Juan Flatus shot a teenager in the head 3 times during a bungled home invasion.
All of the six had either used automatic weapons, silencers, and machine guns to kill their victims.
Armando Junco machine gunned two fellow drug dealers and ripped off 4,000 pounds of marijuana. Jesus Martinez gunned down a restaurant patron who chased him after an armed holdup. And Felix Carbonell murdered a man during a burglary.
A lot of them were in prison in Cuba. I know one of them told prison officials that he had been in prison for 20 years in Cuba before he came over to the United States.
Cuban dictator Fidel Castro had emptied his jails in the 1980s by shipping the worst offenders to Florida as political refugees. A decade later, This gang of homicidal Cuban jailbirds became the notorious Florida Six. The gang's leader, Hector Rivas, knows that there is no way through the deadly razor wire. It'll slice through sinew and muscle like a hot knife through butter. He calculates their best chance is to go under the razor wire, and that timing is the key.
They used the Christmas time area where they had singing and they had some activities at the chapel, at the church, inside the prison to plan their escape and to effectuate their escape.
For weeks, Rivas and his gang of killers steal items from around the prison. Spoons, clean clothes, a long piece of rope, and they start going to church.
The escapees were saying that they were attending a church in the chapel.
The chapel is just 10 meters from the perimeter fence.
In reality, they were going underneath the chapel, changing clothes and digging for periods of time.
With the sound of the Christmas choir practicing above, obscuring their noise, the gang begin to tunnel towards the perimeter fence. But freedom is 10 long meters away. Leicestershire, England, 1987. Inside Gartree Prison, vicious armed robber John Kendall is determined to become the first man to escape from this high security fortress. And on December the 10th, he scans the skies in anticipation.
The planning involved must have been in great detail because they knew exactly what time to expect the helicopter.
At nearby Stansted Airport, Kendall's accomplice, Andrew Russell, has chartered a helicopter.
He told me that he worked for a security company and that he'd hired the helicopter because he had a job the following week in Leicester.
By 3:30 p.m, the helicopter approaches Gartree Prison.
I had no idea that there was a high security prison anywhere near the route that I was taking.
It was a grey December day, fairly misty and murky. Probably meant there were slightly less prisoners on the sports field on exercise.
With the prison in sight, Andrew Russell turns the routine charter into an unexpected nightmare.
My net is down, fiddling with the headset jack plugs. I turn around to ask him what he thought he was doing, and I found his gun pointing at me. The first thing he said to me was, "Do what you're told, and you won't get hurt." So I said to him that I was fine with that. I'd do exactly what he told me, because by now the gun was nestling snugly behind my ear. And the second thing he said to me was, "Take me to the prison. I want you to land on the playing field."
Helicopters were not unknown in the area, but this one came in very low. But by the time they recognised, as I understand it, what was happening, it was on the ground. It landed immediately in the centre of the sports field. It was that quick.
As I landed, when I was maybe 20, 30 feet from the ground, I could see in front of me and to one side of me, two of the prisoners detached themselves from the crowd and started running toward where I was going to land, and did land within seconds.
As Kendall tries to climb into the chopper, another prisoner, murderer Sidney Draper, makes a split-second decision to gamble on escape.
They couldn't get in the left-hand rear passenger door, and they decided to try the other door. And rather than come around the front of the helicopter, which is a perfectly safe and sensible thing to do, they ducked under the tail boom. Of course, I couldn't see them at this stage. If anyone moves around the back of a helicopter, any helicopter pilot is paranoid about someone dying by walking into the tail rotors.
The dock handlers couldn't release dogs because they wouldn't know which prisoners they were trying to detract from getting into the flying machine. I don't think the dogs had seen a helicopter before.
Reaching the passenger side, Kendall and Draper climb aboard.
The guy in front said, take us to the golf course.
As the helicopter takes off, the guards can only watch in frustration.
Staff in any British prison don't carry guns. In fact, if anyone, even police escorts who come into prison, have to remove their guns before they enter the prison. All they have is a baton. A baton against a helicopter was pretty useless.
The escape takes just 30 seconds, and Ian Evans is forced to take to the sky, now carrying three armed and dangerous criminals. In Fremantle, Australia, convicted armed robbers Brendan Abbott and Aaron Reynolds have broken out of maximum security, triggering a massive manhunt.
But they would have mobilised half their police force in Perth to look for him.
Within days, the escapees are crisscrossing Australia, doing what Brendan Abbott does best, robbing banks. On the run, Abbott takes holiday snaps of his travels, including one outside a police station. These audacious photos would soon earn Abbott his nickname.
They had no idea the police would find the roll of film and it would make its way into the newspaper, and Abbott would end up being branded the postcard bandit.
Within weeks, the media catapulted the postcard bandit into a hero for the public and a jeering villain to police. Abbott even returned to Fremantle Jail and brazenly signed the visitor's book. But small cracks started to appear in Abbott's relationship with Reynolds.
Abbott said that Reynolds had a bit of heart and guts about him, just not too many brains.
After splitting the robbery proceeds, the escapees go their separate ways. Aaron Reynolds returns to Perth and is arrested almost immediately. The postcard bandit, now a lone gun, keeps on moving.
He actually had normal jobs while he was on the run, plus he robbed banks also.
With an estimated genius IQ of 140, Brendan Abbott developed bank robbery into an art form.
Abbott perfected the drop-in robbery. He'd lay off his target for months, watching every movement of every staff member, learning everything about the bank's entire layout. Then he'd strike.
In a nutshell, he enjoyed it. And it was done to precision. It was incredible what he achieved. Most times it would either be right on closing time in one of these banks, or it would be right on opening time.
He decided doing them in the city where he was based was probably not a good idea. So he would regularly travel to Adelaide, and there were a series of robberies over the next 3 years.
Brendan James Abbott, a bandit who makes Ned Kelly look like a petty thief. He's stolen $5 million in 37 holdups, hitting banks in Perth, South Australia, New South Wales and Queensland, often hiding inside overnight.
Hitting banks in almost every state, police have no idea Abbott's travelled east to Australia's holiday mecca, the Gold Coast. Here, under the guise of several aliases, he settles down. Even his family don't recognise him.
So I had gotten off a plane from Cairns to Brisbane, and all of a sudden someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Oh, don't you even recognise your own brother?" And that was the first thing. I was looking around everywhere thinking, "Oh, my God." You know, I said to him, "Oh, what are you doing? Oh, where are you going? I'm not telling you anything." Yeah, so it was, you know, to have a general conversation wasn't possible.
It seemed Brendan Abbott was immune from capture, but then he broke his cardinal rule: never rob locally.
He pulled off some very big robberies on the Gold Coast, which immediately drew the attention of detectives in that state, of course. So they started a fairly intense operation to try and catch him.
After a tip-off, the police put Abbott's post office box under surveillance. The postcard bandit becomes suspicious and stops using it. But
he couldn't stop mail coming into that post box. One piece of mail that came in was a bill for a pager that his current girlfriend, Georgia, was using.
Police trace the number to a Gold Coast address and stake it out. On March the 27th, 1995, Abbott steps out his front door.
As he walked along the street, a plainclothes officer pulled out a pistol and stuck it in his face and told him to get on the ground. Abbott couldn't believe it, but he went to ground, and the police officer sees the black bum bag that he was wearing. It had a 45 pistol in it and a large amount of cash, and they had themselves Australia's most wanted man.
Notorious bank robber Brendan James Abbott was recaptured at a Broadbeach home unit. Police say Abbott was armed with a loaded pistol but offered no resistance.
After spending 5.5 years on the run and stealing $5 million, Abbott is once again in prison. But the postcard bandit's days on the run aren't over. Florida, USA, while thousands of holidaymakers relax on Miami Beach. Just an hour away, six of the most vicious killers in captivity are now digging their way out of Glazed Prison towards the perimeter fence. Jesus Martinez, Hector Ravis, Florenzo Alvarez, Armando Junco, Juan Fletus and Felix Carbonell are all brutal murderers, each doing 25 years without parole. But as they begin to dig, they learn that the prison security is being upgraded.
They had to hurry their digging so that they didn't have to dig another 20 or 30 feet and cross underneath that brand new fence that they were just about to put in.
As the gang dig, they need to make sure that they're not buried alive.
It was real, real soft mud, but they could make a very hard wall and floor and ceiling to it, so it really didn't need a lot of wood or other engineering type stuff to make it safe for them to travel through.
But the mud is a dead giveaway if a guard spots their dirty clothes.
They would come back out of the tunnel and put on fresh clothes and go back into the general population of the prison.
On the 2nd of January, after 3 weeks of digging, the breakout is go.
The escape occurred just after New Year's Eve. That was their chance. They had to do it while all the inmates were moving into this one particular area of the prison. The escapees were seen escaping, coming out of the tunnel by one of the corrections officers in a tower. That corrections officer fired either once or twice, but was unable to disable any of the escapees.
And their cunning escape plan has one last brutal twist.
They just made their way out. They went to several hundred yards to an awaiting vehicle where they proceeded to beat up one of the escapees, Felix Carbonell.
They beat Carbonell so badly he can't walk.
He was actually used as a guinea pig to slow the pursuing officers down so that the rest of them could get away.
The plan works. As Carbonell waits helplessly for recapture, the other five race through the cane fields to a waiting car. A desperate gang of murderers is now loose on the streets of Miami. Leicestershire, England. On the football pitch of Gartree Prison, vicious armed robber John Kendall and convicted killer Sidney Draper have just been snatched from incarceration.
The helicopter was actually on the ground for less than 30 seconds, so it was a very smooth operation.
As the helicopter disappears from view, emergency procedures at the prison are activated.
Every governor and every control room in a top security prison had a manual of procedures for different situations. One of those was called Rogue Elephant, which dealt with potential helicopter escapes.
Rogue Elephant is the call sign to launch an RAF Harrier jump jet from a base in nearby Cambridgeshire.
The RAF was supposed to have an aircraft take off and try to intercept what was happening, but there was a delay in the call reaching the right people.
As the Rogue Elephant intercept Harrier jet fails to launch, the pilot of the hijacked helicopter, Ian Evans, has his own problems.
I thought they'd shoot me. I thought the guy with the gun would shoot me.
He starts climbing, hoping to be spotted by the RAF.
I wanted someone to be able to see me on radar, at least, because I figured that the prison authorities would have alerted the nearest airfield by now.
But the escapees are onto him.
They stopped me climbing at around about 300 or 400 feet. The guy with the gun told me to stop messing about, or I'll shoot you in the leg.
Ian Evans knows that he will have to take his life into his own hands if he is to survive.
And the only way I can do that is to deliberately crash the helicopter. And that was my plan. Pretty useless plan, but at least I felt that if I crashed the helicopter, I'd be giving myself an equal chance. I might die, but so would they.
Kendall, Russell and Draper know that they are running out of time.
The guy in front said, take us to the golf course. I didn't want to go to the golf course because the golf course was about 3 minutes away and I needed more than 3 minutes to work out my cunning plan to escape from this situation.
The escapees are desperate to reach the waiting getaway car at the golf course.
It was getting increasingly foggy at this stage. Visibility was down to maybe 3,000 meters, which isn't a great deal in a helicopter. And I said, okay, Give me a chance, give me a chance. I'm doing my best.
But the hijackers run out of patience and force a landing near a road on the outskirts of Market Harbour.
At that very moment, he put away his gun and pulled out a pair of handcuffs. And I was just so relieved. Ugh, he's not going to shoot me.
Handcuffed and helpless, Ian Evans is grateful to be alive.
The escape took place at Gartree Prison, northwest of London.
In Central News tonight, the main story, a massive police hunt is underway as two prisoners are airlifted to freedom.
Queensland, Australia. After almost 6 years on the run, Brendan Abbott, a.k.a. the Postcard Bandit, has been arrested by Gold Coast Police.
Abbott escaped from Fremantle Jail in 1989. He's taunted police ever since, often sending them postcards.
The Queensland authorities immediately put Abbott into solitary confinement because they believed him to be an extreme escape risk.
Given a 20-year sentence, Abbott is sent to the Sir David Longland Correctional Centre, Queensland's toughest maximum security prison, nicknamed the Killing Fields.
He set about doing exactly what he did in Fremantle, and that was living and breathing escape plans.
The key to Abbott's next escape attempt is angel wire, a diamond-encrusted metal cord used by jewellers to cut gemstones. Angel wire also works on high tensile steel prison bars.
It was very difficult sourcing that angel wire.
It was one of the girlfriends of one of the escapees brought it in internally.
Calculating that a mass breakout will confuse authorities and give him the best chance of escape, Abbott recruits Jason Nixon, Andrew Jeffrey, Oliver Alanchik and Peter Sterling. Three convicted killers and a rapist. Using the angel wire, all five men take turns cutting through the bars of their cells. And on November the 6th, while the prison is understaffed, Abbott gives the breakout the green light. All five slip through their pre-cut bars and climb over the cell block perimeter fence.
They did that by stacking up some chairs, one on top of each other, and jumping over it. They cleared the wire and then made it to the first of three outer fences.
And there were wire cutters thrown over the fence. There was a gun thrown over the fence.
And then when they started cutting that, they set off the first alarms in the prison control room.
Amazingly, the alarms are ignored and the escape is recorded on closed-circuit TV cameras.
These pictures reveal the apparent ease with which five dangerous inmates, led by Brendan Abbott, escaped from Sir David Longland Prison.
The prison control room's procedures were not up to date. The prison officer in the room wasn't familiar with procedures and didn't really work there. And there's a lot of flaws in the prison security that were shown up later on in a prison inspector's report.
They make short work of the first fence. Casually, they then decide where to attack the next fence.
Then the prison vehicle, who was patrolling the outer perimeter, realised something was going on and arrived on the scene.
Abbott's getaway driver, Brendan Berrishin, opens fire on the patrol, disabling their vehicle. The prison officers return fire.
They felt the bullets whizzing past their ears that night. They were absolutely terrified, and with good reason.
Nearly 4 minutes later, success. The five crawl through, the last caught briefly on the fence.
Mark, get the car! Quickly!
Abbott and his gang scramble to the getaway car and vanish into the night.
Heavily armed police were out in force today, combing the bushland and suburbs to Brisbane South. Five of Australia's most dangerous criminals on the run.
Florida, USA. At the Glades Prison, 75 miles north of Miami, six convicted murderers have just escaped by digging a 10-metre tunnel from the prison chapel.
We recaptured one inmate approximately one quarter of a mile away from the institution. So right now we are believing that there are five inmates currently at large in the South Florida area.
There was a massive manhunt around the prison. Prison officials, officers, canine officers, members of the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, and the city of Belblade all participated in trying to locate the fugitives. They, at that point, did not know that the fugitives had gotten a ride in a vehicle that would take them directly back to the Miami area.
As the gang arrive in downtown Miami, Juan Fletus decides to go it alone.
Juan Fletus made a phone call to a subject in Miami that said that he would help the escape. So he wanted to depart to try and beat the odds and leave the other group. The smaller the group, the less likely they are to be arrested.
Martinez, Rivas, Alvarez, and Junco are dropped off on the outskirts of Miami.
The remaining four escapees were taken to a squatter's camp, an encampment west of town. It was very rural, very wooded area with small little camps, and they decided to remain there in the camp for a few days until the heat was off them.
We do not know where they are at this point in time. That is why we are absolutely desperate for help. As all of you know, these five individuals were convicted of first-degree murder. They are extremely dangerous.
With five armed and dangerous murderers on the loose, authorities fear a bloodbath. Leicestershire, England. Gartree Maximum Security Prison is on high alert. Vicious armed robber John Kendall and convicted murderer Sidney Draper have just escaped.
It was the first escape by air from a British prison. It took less than 30 seconds.
Now, Kendall and Draper are the most wanted men in Britain.
There was a whole relay of hijacking cars and to make their getaway. And they'd they'd just stop people at gunpoint in their car, pull them out of the car and stole the car and away they went. They made their getaway by doing so many of those that the police weren't able to keep up with it.
Believing that he can't trust Draper, Kendall ditches the tag-along escapee.
Kendall had no resources of his own, and to keep body and soul together was going out robbing again. So it became vitally important, knowing the propensity to kill somebody that Kendall had, to catch Kendall.
Kendall's one-man crime wave finally gives the police a breakthrough.
There was a robbery of a security car vehicle delivering cash to a bank in Highgate, and the security guard made a photo-fit impression of the robber, and it could have been an absolute snapshot from a camera of Kendall.
As authorities receive a tip-off, the manhunt moves to southwest London.
And the breakthrough came when a detective constable from Brighton had information that Kendall was with his wife in a flat in the King's Road in Chelsea.
On January the 31st at 4 a.m, armed police stormed the Chelsea flat.
They had guns trained up on the flat and shields, and they were shouting, I think they said, come out, we're armed police.
John Kendall, his wife Lorraine, and his accomplice Andrew Russell are all arrested.
Detectives spent the morning removing evidence from the Chelsea flat, hoping to find the clue which will lead them to Draper.
Sidney Draper was a man that had resources in his own right, more so than Kendall did. He didn't need to go across the pavement doing robberies, and that wasn't his game anyway. I mean, he was more into gangland crime.
For another year, Sidney Draper eludes the police until the underworld gives him up.
They're tow rags, they're informers, they're rats, they grass each other up.
John Kendall was given an extra 7 years for armed robbery. Sidney Draper had 4 years added to his life sentence. Andrew Russell got 10 years.
I don't think there was anything my staff or myself could have done to prevent an escape of that nature.
Following the Gartree escape, the British government ditched the rogue elephant plan and protected every high-security prison against helicopter landings.
Today, the exercise yard at Gartree's covered by high-tension wire, making sure such an escape can never happen again.
Florida, USA. Five brutal killers have broken out of the Glades prison and are on the run in the suburbs of Miami. Martinez, Rivas, Alvarez, Junco and Flatus tunneled their way out 9 days ago. And now, they each have a $10,000 bounty on their head. Four of the gang are hiding out in a squatter's camp on the outskirts of the city.
Two of them stayed at the camp, two of them got antsy and went into town. They were getting bored out at the camp and wanted some excitement.
Rivas and Martinez arrive in their old neighborhood of Little Havana. Meanwhile, the $10,000 reward pays off for the police.
Two homeless individuals went to a highway patrol station in Miami and told the officers there that they believed two of the escapees were living in the squatters' camp.
More than 100 federal and state agents, along with local police, around the camp.
Armando Junco actually attacked a task force member and attempted to secure the gun away from the officer, where the fight ensued and he was shot and killed.
Lorenzo Alvarez gives up and begins his journey back to life in prison. The next day, Jesus Martinez is spotted in Little Havana.
We were in a marked police vehicle in the intersection of Southwest 8th Avenue and 6th Street in the Little Havana neighborhood, and we observed a suspect, which became known to us as Jesus Martinez. He had no identification. We continued asking for his name, kept giving us the runaround. Subject had two tattoos. And that's when we started asking for more additional information on the radio while still being cautious, because the individual was in jail for murder.
As Martinez insists he's not the man they're looking for, Officer Leon becomes more suspicious.
That moment, yes, we did handcuff him, put him in the back seat of the police car, took him to the station, where he still denied who he was. We were able to take him up to get his fingerprints matched, along with the fingerprint card for Jesus Martinez, who escaped from prison. And it was a match, and he finally admitted to us, all right, you got me, I had to try.
Next morning, Hector Rivas is also recaptured in Little Havana, leaving only Juan Flatus still at large.
Flatus eluded his capture for over 2.5 years until he committed a home invasion robbery in Merida, Mexico, and he was captured by the Mexican police. We knew we had our man.
Despite attempts to extradite him back to Florida, Flatus remains behind bars in Mexico.
We desperately want to close this investigation, and it won't be closed until Juan Flatus is released from the Mexican prison and brought back to the state of Florida, where we can put him back in to a prison here in Florida.
The gang received between 3 and 15 years on top of their original life sentences. And Glades Prison built two new security fences, one with movement sensors, the other a rat fence of underground bars that go deep into bedrock to stop tunneling. In Brisbane, Australia, Brendan Abbott, aka the Postcard Bandit, has masterminded a mass breakout from the Sir David Longland Supermax prison with the help of accomplice Brendan Berishan on the outside.
It was a daring breakout. They cut their prison bars with diamond-encrusted angel wire before making their escape in this heavily armed getaway car. Telltale bloodstains indicate at least one of the fugitives is injured.
Abbott's first move is to split from his fellow escapees. As Nixon, Sterling, Jeffrey and Alanchik are recaptured over the next few weeks, police once again concentrate on Abbott and Berishan.
It was a massive manhunt. It was a national manhunt. It was on the front pages of every newspaper across the country.
Abbott and Berishan go back to doing what the Postcard Bandit does best, robbing banks in every state.
Police in Western Australia believe bandit Brendan Abbott may have masterminded the state's biggest bank heist after a Perth branch of the Commonwealth Bank was robbed of $450,000.
Two men were waiting for bank staff.
to arrive around 8:30 a.m., then followed in at gunpoint. Somehow the bandits knew the risks would be worth it. With Christmas takings, there was far more money than usual, nearly $500,000 cash at the bank.
An amazing haul, but cracks were beginning to appear in the criminal partnership.
Brendan Berrichon had picked himself up a nasty little heroin habit, and that, of course, can only lead to bad news.
As police approach Berrichon during a drug score in Melbourne, he panics, shooting both officers and leaving behind his ID.
I was shot in the arm, my partner's got to the side.
Abbott and Berrichon are forced to run again, travelling interstate to Adelaide.
Abbott was absolutely livid with Berrichon. They had everything in place they needed to live a covert lifestyle as long as they wanted. And now they were back on the run again without any secure safe house to go to.
They hook up with Michelle, a Thai prostitute Berrichon was fond of, and head to Alice Springs in Australia's Red Centre. But police have found Michelle's photo at Abbott's Melbourne residence, and her face is now all over the news.
He was actually driving around Alice Springs in one of their vehicles when the description of the vehicle he was actually driving came across the radio. He couldn't get out of that vehicle quick enough.
Abbott and Berrichon are forced to flee again, this time north to Darwin, unaware that the town is already on high alert. As a phone call from Michelle to a Darwin motel is intercepted, the police set up surveillance. And on May the 2nd, Brendan Abbott walks into the motel.
They couldn't believe their luck, but at the same time, they really had to think as to how they were going to bring down the nation's most wanted man on the streets of Darwin without having some innocent civilians taken with him.
As armed police prepare to strike, Abbott leaves his hotel room, drops off his laundry, and heads off for a pizza. As Abbott steps out of the pizza bar, police move in.
There was a troop carrier, came screaming in one way, troop carrier came screaming in the other way. He said there was like 100 guns hanging out the window, and he said, I just put my hands up in the air. He said, knelt down and went straight to the ground.
The man no jail has been able to hold finally back in custody. Brendan James Abbott captured in Darwin overnight, carrying all the tools of his trade, two handguns, ammunition, police radio scanners, a stack of false identities, even wigs. He'd planned to be on the run much longer.
He definitely was in a state of shock because he certainly wasn't expected to be apprehended in Darwin.
But the 36-year-old bandit stayed calm, even joking with police.
One of his requests has been for us to retrieve his laundry in the dryer.
Banned from commercial airlines, Brendan Abbott was herded onto a police service jet. Uniformed officers at every corner, ensuring this time there'd be no escape.
Brendan Berrichon, tracked from an address in Abbott's wallet, was quickly apprehended. And the postcard bandit, Australia's greatest celebrity criminal since Ned Kelly, was given an extra 39 years on his sentence.
As Abbott began the final leg of his journey back to jail, some were already saying a third escape won't be far from his mind.
Ruthless robber or lovable rogue? Unless he escapes again, Australia's most colourful criminal will be inside a cell until his 70s. Next time, Britain's public enemy number one has nowhere left to run.
I was going to run out of steam. I was going to get caught or get killed.
An Australian drug lord walks out of jail in a false beard and wig.
None of the prison officers seem to be looking at him or paying him any attention.
And in New York State, a small-time thief bursts out of jail and shoots the sheriff's men.
We're just doing our jobs. And this guy wants to kill us.